Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Thanks for walking me down memory lane with that cringeworthy moment, Jake.
What?
It was my first time on air operating phone lines. Well, I wasn't operating them. I was just taking them, but I wasn't used to introducing callers or throwing to callers.
No, it was great. You were in the moment.
You sounded like you've been doing it for 40 years.
Yeah, you were old school radio.
So what I did is I just said the first thing that came to my mind, and it was like I was playing a radio person in that moment, and I was like, how do people introduce calls? So I threw to it, and I was like, Brian, talk to me. And after I did it, I just wanted to peel my skin off. It was so talk to me.
Funny.
Is Pete Carroll's emphasis on running the ball the answer to the Seahawks team right now? Is that the answer he believes it is? Is it what's going to get this offense turned around? Again, that number is 206-421-3776. 206-421-3776. Is Pete's emphasis on running the ball the answer for this team? Going to line three, Josh in Pleasanton, California. Josh, what do you think?
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So absolutely, Pete Carroll's move to actually take control and run the football more is the answer. I think the big thing you notice specifically in the two drives in the second half is just the physicality in being able to establish the line of scrimmage. If you specifically go to the first drive in the second half, it was run heavy. They controlled the ball. It went right down and scored. They basically negated T.J. Watt. Second drive, because they were able to establish the line of scrimmage, now you see Shane Waldron's playbook open up, where notably there was a pass, I think, to Everett, to Lockett, and then the touchdown to Disley. So literally in that second drive, because they had established the run, you started to see all the creativity that we had wanted for months from Shane Waldron's offense. Now, literally, if you go back to the type of team that Pittsburgh is, like, you see how they beat us. Mm-hmm. They get you in third and long, the crowd gets amped up, and T.J. Watt goes to town. And literally that's what destroyed them. If you run the football, you negate all of that. And literally, that's how this team is going to have to win. The big issue is going to be when Russell Wilson comes back, because Russell Wilson literally does not want to run an offense like this. He thinks he's Patrick Mahomes, but that's not going to be championship football. And so I literally worry about the Seahawks having to make a major decision once Russell Wilson comes back.
Josh, I love everything you said in terms of the running game and what it can do, because it's 100% right, it's 100% accurate, and you did see the offense become more balanced as they started to be able to run the football. The question becomes, okay, that's the second half, and they're able to rip off runs of 7, 11, 21. The run game was clicking to the highest order. Josh, is this a team that they can become? Is this who they are? Can they be this way for 60 minutes? Do you believe that's who they, what their identity is?
So I think the question is, it's not who they can be for 60 minutes, but it's something that they need to become more of a majority of the time, so that way they can get a better mix of run to pass. Because specifically, if you go to that second drive in the second half, that's the mix that you really want, where you have a good mix of run and some creative throwing. But you can't get to that if you have no threat of the run. The big problem that you're going to face is that, yeah, you could try to run it and beat some bad teams. You could try to throw it a lot and beat some bad teams. But Pittsburgh and the style of defense they play, that's going to be similar to what you're going to face from a playoff team. Next week against New Orleans, that's going to be similar to what you're going to face against a playoff team. To beat playoff teams, you're going to have that mix. And so they're going to have to run it and establish the line of scrimmage. If they think they can just throw it around like Kansas City, they're in for a world of hurt.
I love the call. Great call there, Josh. I agree with everything that you said, from what it can do for you stylistically, what it can do for you to help balance everything out, and how you negate great pass rushing units. You have to be able to establish the line of scrimmage. You have to be able to run the football, and that was something that I was talking about going into this game, is that running game being a big factor into it. My problem and my big doubt in all of this is that, is this a team that can physically overpower? Are they built to be able to do that? And to your point, it's not about necessarily doing that. It's about you know, being able to establish that running game so that you can have it available to you to balance everything out from a run pass perspective. And Stacey, I just think that this is, instead of coming in with the mantra of we're going to be a run first oriented team in order to get to everything we want, it has to be able to be in that situation matchup oriented and being willing to let the matchups dictate how you're going to play that particular
week.
Yeah,
the way I look at it is like you're playing to your strengths and what you do well. And if what you do well is a balanced approach because you've got a great run game and great blocking off or run blocking offensive linemen and a quarterback who can throw a deep pass and keep the defense on its heels, then great, fantastic. Those are your strengths. I think what I worry is, look, you look at Baltimore. Baltimore is able to run the ball better than anyone else, and they were able to do so not just in Lamar Jackson's MVP season, but they're able to do so this year. They're fantastic with it, one of the best run teams we've seen of late. But that's because they've got the right personnel to do it. And you've seen them lose their starting running back and still be able to do it. That's in part because of Lamar Jackson. That's because of coaching. It's because of scheme. It's because of the offensive line. It's everything. So what I worry about is that you're going to get into a situation where, well, how do you know that you can lean into the run, right? It's the same thing I look at with the pass. Like, do you have a great pass blocking offensive lineman? Not especially. I mean, Dwayne Brown's great. No one else is really like a premier pass pro. So I don't know that you have dedicated personnel to either approach.
I guess what I'm saying is that I know that this is the approach that they need to go with over the next couple weeks with Geno Smith, and they're going to have to remain balanced when Russell Wilson comes back. No one's disputing that. No one is arguing that. But to be a run first oriented team when Russell Wilson comes back, that's not going to be the recipe for success for this group. And quite frankly, just because they did it successfully in the second half, where Mike Tomlin admitted that they were fooled in terms of the way the Seahawks were approaching the game in the second half offensively, I want to see it against the New Orleans Saints for me to be fully bought into, yes, they can be a run-first-oriented team and beat very good defenses in this league. I just am not quite there yet. I don't think they're that good up front to be able to totally dominate the line of scrimmage. They need Russell Wilson and that passing attack to really balance everything out and allow them to have a great mix of both. They're not masters at one particular thing.
Are you ready for old-timey radio, Stacey?
Yes.
Here we go. Going to Jeremy in Texas. Jeremy, talk to me.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Yeah, I think you got to keep an open mind on this, and you take it one week at a time. I get concerned when I hear we got to do this or we got to do that on this team because, I mean, you spent a lot of money on bringing in talent to help Russ throw more. You got Everett in here. You went to a new offensive coordinator that, you know, I was expecting to see more play action this year. You need the run, you know, obviously to set that up. And then you look at what you have to work with right now. You have, you know, it's been said your two starting running backs are hurt. Alex Collins was doing great. His health is a question mark. I don't have any confidence in Penny. And the other two backs, I just don't think they're durable enough to handle it long term. So, you know, I think it would be great if they could run the ball. But, you know, New Orleans has a pretty stout defense, and they're going to be expecting that. So you've got to keep your options open.
So you're saying adapting is more important than just having your, I guess, identity and sticking with it.
Exact for this year, exactly.
Right.
I mean, but I think that, you know, it's going to come to Russ is going to have to make up his mind. If this is really what Pete wants to do, he's going to have to say, okay, do I want to spend the rest of my career here in this offense or trade me where I can, you know, demonstrate my talents? Because Seattle's going to need to get something if they're going to want to rebuild. They have nothing to bargain with right now that's going to land them any type of draft picks at all. And why did they go out and get Metcalf? He's going to want to get paid in a couple years. So, you know, you really got to think about that.
Yeah, Jeremy, I love the call, and I'm so sorry to start you off with that horrific, you know, talk to me.
I don't understand the problem.
You handled it extremely well, rolled right into it. Jeremy, yeah. We love having you as a regular caller.
It's
please continue
welcoming.
To keep calling in and bringing the fire. But I agree with Jeremy on this. This is not, hey, we need to come in, and I'm talking about this in the long term. In the short term, for Geno Smith in this group, yeah, you do need to come in and have an extra emphasis in the running game. You do need to be able to establish the line of scrimmage and be able to ease Geno Smith into the game. He is not good enough to say, hey, we're going to throw the ball all over the yard, even if the matchup dictates it. I don't believe that that's favorable for the Seattle Seahawks in order to win games with Geno Smith in the ball game. But what you want, ideally, in a perfect world offensively, okay, and I think Pete Carroll ultimately believes this, but sometimes has the tendency to want to lean on the running game, is that you have to be adaptable week to week, year to year. And with the New England Patriots, that's why they were so good. That's why they had such great sustained success for so long, is that they were able to do both. Throw the football with Tom Brady, or have a good enough running game, running scheme that they could rely on it if they needed to in situations or in certain games. And right now, the Seahawks, from an identity standpoint, they have not been able to establish that. The flexibility aspect of it is so important, and that's why this offense, that's why with Shane Waldron, I was so excited about it. It's not, you know, Russell Wilson, Jeremy said, Russell's going to need to decide what he wants in terms of his future. I agree with that. If it comes down to if Pete Carroll wants to be a run-first-oriented offense no matter what. I don't believe that's what the idea is here when Russ is behind center for Pete. I mean, I could be wrong on that. What I believe ultimately, though, is that when it comes down to Russell Wilson's mind, he's not thinking that he wants to throw the ball 40 times a game. I just think that when it comes to first, second down, when it comes to being aggressive, when it comes to starting fast, that you're not playing this game of rope-a-dope and then having to play hero ball at the end. I think it's a combination of being able to win in every single aspect and having the ability offensively to do so. I think that's ultimately what the desire has been for years and years, and it's going to be something that we'll see if they can get to. But right now, in these next 2 weeks, Geno Smith, you're going to have to run the football and be successful.
Going to Zach in Puyallup. Zach, talk to me.
Hey, how's it going? You know what? I think it's absolutely pivotal that we run the football and run it strong as we did last night. We ran it well, and I think it's worked in years past where we went to back-to-back Super Bowls, yet we had Marshawn Lynch behind us. But I think it's very pivotal. It opens up play action. It opens up our offense to run what we need to and deep balls to lock it and hit DK in the end zone. I think it opens that up. And I think us running the ball is absolutely pivotal as our offense, which just gets it going, gets Wilson going. And you know, I think Seattle and our fans are on that road. And I think Pete's on that road too. Let's run the ball. Let's make it happen. We don't have to be an action show like Kansas City. You know, I think we just step up, run the ball, ground and pound, hard-nosed football, and it's worked in the past, and I think it could work in the future.
So does Zach, my question with all that is, okay, that's the approach offensively. Does this defense have the ability to hold other top-flight defenses? I mean, it's one thing to hold an offense that is struggling like the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's another thing to be able to hold an offense like the Saints that are struggling, or the Jacksonville Jaguars. But when it comes to Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers and this group, playing that style, will you have the ability defensively to hold your end of the bargain? Because that means that you're willing to play in tighter, low-scoring games if your defense can contain the opposing offense.
I think if we can control the clock, I think that would be best on our side of the football and our side of the game. And, I mean, judging off of how we looked last night with utilizing Adams the way we did, and I'm a Boomer Sooner, and I think that our corner out of Oklahoma, he did great last night. You know, he had one play that was shining star, but I think there's much more to come from in that defense and the style that they played last night. I think it's going to show that just controlling the clock is huge. And there's no doubt about it. If we had Russell last night, we would have won that game. There's no doubt about it. And you know, Geno, I give it to him. You know, I'm so proud of what he did as a backup to come in there and play the way he played. It was fabulous. But I think controlling the clock and our defense as well, controlling that clock too on that side as much as you can with the way that we can run stop and show that what we can do, I think just controlling the clock is huge.
All right, thanks for the call, Zach. And he's right. The Seahawks have really struggled with time of possession, and they've struggled to stay on the field. It's negatively impacted the defense and the offense. They just haven't been able to sustain drives. That's a problem that is carried over from last season. The difference is that this time they don't have the big scoring plays to at least keep the offense ahead, so they're just playing catch-up. But the offense last year struggled with third down two and struggled to sustain those long drives. So I think the one thing I would say to Zach is, I think what the Seahawks did in the past when they had, I'm looking past 2018, so back in their best years when they had Marshawn Lynch, when they had Russell Wilson, I don't think it was just, they had more money to spend on defense. They had so many superstars on rookie contracts. And so when I look at repeating what you've done in the past, the only thing I would caution is, have you been able to find that same success of late? They haven't found a running back as successful as Marshawn Lynch outside of Chris Carson. And that is not with for a lack of trying. I'm just going to keep this moving. Going to, Jake, are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Tyler and Mukilteo, or should I say, Muckle, talk to me.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing great. How are you doing?
Not too bad. I mean, as much as I'd want to say yes to stick with the run, I really don't think we have the personnel for that. And, I mean, we don't have Geno playing. We don't have Carson playing. I'm assuming every other team that we have coming up on the schedule is going to assume that we're going to just run the ball. So, I mean, personally, I would hope that we would mix it up, kind of do some more matchup type things rather than just stick to running the ball, because I'm assuming that that's what most defenses are going to think what's coming.
Thanks for the call,
Tyler.
I really don't see this as, look, this is going to be football of run the ball in a cloud of dust and continue to do it over and over and over and over again. I think that that's a little bit, and I know that that's not what Tyler was saying, but I know that there's a lot of people that are fearful of that. More so what I see is that when you try to run the football the way that I believe that Pete Carroll and this group wants to moving forward, there is the level of physicality that you have to be able to match and sustain for 60 minutes. And you have to be committed to it in order for it to work. That means that you're going to have to deal through the excruciating second and long run play, because you're trying to give body blows to the defense, and in your philosophy, you believe that those body blows are going to carry weight for you in the second half, that they are going to hurt that defense and wear them down as the game goes on. So now, not only are you winning the time of possession battle, you're controlling the game in your favor, and eventually you start to wear those guys down, and it becomes more and more successful as the game wears on. So that, to me, is something that you're going to have to prepare for as you get into that situation. The conversation then balances out to, Stacey, what you said earlier in today's show is, this is on Shane Waldron to then make that, A, the running game dynamic enough and different enough where you're not able to key on it and be able to get a clear beat on it from a defensive perspective, and B, that you can balance it out with timely play-action calls, screen calls, quick passes. You have to be able to balance and mix it enough to keep guys off balance. If not, then you're going to be forcing Geno Smith into situations that Josh in Pleasanton, California said that you don't want to do. Third and long. It only works if you're successful on first and second down, because you could be opening up yourself, if you're not successful, into third and longs no matter what. So either way, this is kind of it all comes down to execution. Whatever the identity that you want to be, you ultimately have to stick to it. You have to trust it. You have to believe it wholeheartedly, because if you don't and you tiptoe into it, it's never going to work.
Going to Sean in Centralia. Sean, is Pete Carroll's emphasis on running the ball going to be the answer for this offense?
Yes and no. I know that's a terrible answer, but I think yes right now. And I'm not so sure it won't work even with Russ coming back, because I think Jake is hitting the nail on the head. I think even if the run game is working, you're going to have to mix it up. It's what they used to do. I mean, I think people get so hung up on the running with Marshawn Lynch that they forget they used to mix it up. And I think they can still do it even more so with Waldron's offense, because it is like the Rams. I think the biggest problem he had to begin with this season was trying to find the right running back rotation. You know, the one game he only ran Collins once. Another game, I forget what it was, I think he ran him three times. Mm. And I really think they were having trouble. We all know about the defense, but I think the first five games, the offense was stagnant too and having trouble. So I think they have to establish something, whether it's the run and you feed off the run, or like somebody said, from week to week, you establish run now, then teams will think you're going to run, and Russ comes out and throws five times in a row or what have you. But they just got to figure out something. But let me say one more thing, and you can beat me over the head for it.
All right, Sean, what do you got?
Schneider and Carroll, only real, real bad move in their time here. You can talk about McDowell, whatever. I think it's going to come back to haunt him is the Adams deal. And I know you're not discussing that right now, but I honestly do think that's the one move that's going to come back to bite him right in the rear.
Mm. Now, Sean, we're just going to skip over the offensive comments and just get to the last one that you make because it's a big
Jake's
one.
Jake's picking it up and running with it.
I am.
Speaking of, pun intended.
I believe that when you're looking at this trade, the way it'll come down as to whether it works out or not is not just the overall success, but the commitment of embracing who Jamal Adams is and building your defense around that individual player. That has always been the concern or the question mark about this move, is that is Jamal Adams just a player that you can plug and play into your system and allows you to do so, or are you building around the individual player and molding the defense to fit their needs, to fit their style, and ultimately to maximize their potential? When you make big trades like this, it's either because in your evaluation you believe it's the missing piece to what you have, or B, you are willing to do that. And I believe that they were thinking that Jamal Adams would come in here and just perfectly play in like Cam Chancellor and add a little bit of extra something to that with the pass rush. But really, Jamal Adams is a player that goes beyond the traditional system that Pete Carroll has had. And it's been obvious that you need to do more outside of what you're comfortable with or what you've been accustomed to doing to maximize Jamal Adams and ultimately how to utilize him. And their commitment in doing that is going to be revealing and ultimately will determine, in my opinion, how good this defense will eventually become and how good Jamal Adams can be for the Seattle Seahawks.
All right, we didn't get to all of our callers today. Noah and Fife, I'm sorry, I didn't have a time to get to you. But if we take calls Monday, Friday, if I see your name on Friday, man, I'll make sure to call you out there. But shout out to you for calling in. And appreciate all of you guys for calling. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Kings Heating and Air. Coming up next, Jake, I'm calling an audible. I want to get back to a conversation was it Zach that brought it up? The idea of looking to the past to try to find success with your offensive identity. I love that conversation. We're going to jump into it next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
All right, before we jump into the Seahawks conversation, I'm seeing quite a few questions from texters about the latest with Rolovich, obviously Washington State football coach Nick Rolovich. Today is the deadline for the COVID-19 vaccination, which the assumption is Rolovich did not get as he was seeking a religious exemption. So a decision will need to be made on that. There's rumors that he could be out. And I'm seeing a lot of questions, some different and differing reports. So I'm just going to tell you guys the latest based on three different sources, three different tweets from three different people connected to this program. And then I will clarify before, right now, and after that there has been no official word from Washington State. No official word from Washington State yet, okay? So if you hear stuff, it's just stuff that's being leaked or stuff that's being talked about. So first, there's Mike Tice, obviously former Seahawk, former Vikings head coach, and Wazoo alum. His is making the most rounds. He says Wazoo head football coach Rolovich is out today for his refusal to get the COVID-19 vaccination. Situation could get pretty ugly. So that's the tweet that is circulating most heavily. Scott Hansen of the Seattle Times has the second. He says, I was told to expect news from Wazoo today regarding football coach Nick Rolovich, and that should come after the reported mandatory meeting between Cougar players and AD Pat Chun. That meeting reportedly happening later this evening. I'm guessing whatever is happening won't be leaked early because the players should know first. So that's the Seattle Times. Thirdly, Theo Lawson of the Spokesman Review, he just gives a little bit of insight. He doesn't have an update on it yet. He just said that normally he gets all of the Wazoo reporters get emails about like, hey, Rolovich will be speaking at this time, there'll be this time. And he just said, hey, we didn't get any emails. So don't know if it means anything, but we didn't get emails about normal media sessions that we would normally have with Rolovich for today. So those are the three tweets that are making the rounds, the three things people are talking about. If you are seeing it confirmed anywhere, it has not been confirmed anywhere. So for right now, there is no update from Washington State.
And I believe ultimately that we will get our answer by the end of the day. So by the end of the day, I believe that we will fully know whether Nick Rolovich is fully employed or not. And to be quite honest, all signs are pointing to Nick Rolovich being, you know, let go by Washington State. But again, that's just me speculating based off of what we are seeing and how this operation usually goes. So don't take that as a confirmation or you know, full report and run with it. But that we just wanted to keep you updated with what we were seeing at the current time.
That's right. And obviously, stay tuned to 710 ESPN. The second that any official word breaks or that anything else is reported via official sources like the Seattle Times or Spokesman Review, then I'm sure that if it's not our show, Wyman and Bob, who follow us, will be all over it. So obviously everyone here tracking this story to keep you guys updated, but nothing official for right now. Jumping to another topic here, I thought that a caller, I think it was Zach, had such an interesting point, and it's one that I think a lot of people point to when it comes to figuring out the identity for this team. And it wasn't a bad point. It's one that I caution against, but I also completely understand. So it was, if it worked before, it can work again. Or like they've had an offensive identity that worked for them before and led them to a Super Bowl, they can do it again. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I would say is, yes, in theory. The problem is they haven't been able to get players like that again. And you can point to Russell Wilson's huge contract and say, well, how can you get a great defense and how can you get a great running back and how can you get a great offensive line with a quarterback that's getting $35 million per year? And part of that is fair, but another part of it isn't, because that entire roster, like the biggest stars on it, essentially, were all on their rookie contracts at the time that they won the Super Bowl. They were one of the youngest rosters to ever win a Super Bowl. No one was getting money. And it was also great drafting. They hit on cheap free agents that ended up excelling with Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. And they also hit on draft picks. They had one of the best drafts we've ever seen. One of the best drafts we have ever seen in NFL history. Mm-hmm. And they had a great 2011 as well leading into that. So that's also what led to their success. It wasn't just running the ball. It was running the ball with Marshawn Lynch that they got in a mid-season trade for basically nothing. He ended up being one of the best running backs we've ever seen in a Seattle Seahawks uniform, and they have not been able to find that success since.
I believe that there are no absolutes. Okay, there's no absolutes in terms of passing more is going to win you games. Running more is going to win you games. Time of possession is going to win you games. There are no absolutes in the game of football. There's only context in how it works together and what your philosophy is to make it all mold and mesh together. So what do I mean by that? It means by, you know, Stacey, as you pointed out, okay, the Seahawks in their first iteration where they were the most successful and where Zach and Puyallup or many other people think and have that same sentiment is, hey, this is who they were when they were the most successful. This is Pete Carroll at his best. This is what they need to get back to. Well, the running game, everybody focuses on that running game. Yes, they had Marshawn Lynch. Yes, they poured the most resources that they ever did at any point into the offensive line at that time. So that's another thing that is different. The other thing as well is that as you talked about, is the defense was historically great. One of the best defenses in the NFL to complement the style that they chose to play with, which was a physical running game, time of possession, low scoring, and they were going to grind it out. And sometimes they were just flat out more physical and more physically dominating than their opponents, and they would blow them out because of it. Right now, you decide to play that style of game. Why are you doing so? It's not necessarily to do it because you've got a great defense to rely on. You're doing it to try to protect your defense. And that, to me, can also be a fallacy. At some point, you're going to, if you play against really good offenses like the Green Bay Packers, like the Tampa Bay Bucks, and like the Rams, who can score points and will score points on you, you have to be able to keep up with that. And it's not just simply going to be controlling time of possession that is going to win you the battle. And when you have opponents that can score quickly, if your defense is playing as bad as it's been playing, it doesn't really matter. And so to me, there has to be a fine-tuned balance of what they want to be, who they want to be moving forward, and stick to that. And we'll see what eventually that becomes. And ultimately, I think that it's going to be put into major question this week, this Monday, this next game against the Saints. And Pete Carroll wants to run the football more. He's been adamant, coming out of this game, his post-game presser, and then his interview with Mike Salk earlier this morning on 710 ESPN. The conversation has been, I want to run the football more. We need to get back to that. And they need to show, okay, if this is who you want to be, Pete, then you need to be able to be successful with it. You need to show that it can be a winning formula against good quality defenses, and that's going to be the ultimate challenge. It's one thing to say we want to do this. It's another to be fully committed to it and pour your resources into making that happen and have a philosophy from offense, defense, special teams to complement that philosophy.
All right, what I need to know is coming your way next. Send your questions in right now, 206-421-3776. That is the Mac and Jack's text line. Any question you have, send it in right now. Turning it over to you guys next. It's What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Get your questions in right now to the Mac and Jack's text line. Any question you want, 206-421-3776. Let's start here. What's the deal with LJ Collier being a healthy scratch every week? If he's not needed in his position, shouldn't we move on and find extra depth?
That's a great question.
It's a great question, but it's also where? What are you going to do? It's not like there's somebody that's so much better than LJ Collier out there for the taking, and he's one of the guys that you drafted. So I hate this answer, but you've drafted him. He's on your roster. He's not costing you a ton of money. But what I would say is that LJ Collier's likelihood of making the roster next year probably is not good at all. And it's just so disappointing. I mean, literally, I don't care what the quality of talent was like, that he was a late first-round pick. I just hate the excuses that it's a throwaway when it's a late round first-round pick. No, sorry. It's not a throwaway, and it's not one of those draft picks that you can look at and say, oh, it's fine that this guy isn't even a role player, that this guy is a healthy scratch. That is a joke. That's a bad, bad thing for this group, and it's another reason why they continue to be in a tough spot.
It's the same thing I look at with Rashad Penny when people were like, why even keep him? Just cut him and move on. And I think the idea is like, well, is the person we're going to find, you know, on the street or via a trade roughly going to offer the same level of talent? And if the answer is yes, you might as well just keep the person you have on your roster because they're both playing on rookie deals. And then the last thing you want is for that player that you cut to take off elsewhere. So it's kind of like, well, you already have him here. He's the cheapest he'll ever be. At least, you know, assuming he doesn't like take off somehow. And just that it's not really hurting your pockets to keep this person on. But it is an important question because 4 healthy scratches in 6 games for a first round pick. Yikes.
Yeah, not good.
Let's see what I need to know. Could the Seahawks trade Jamal Adams? Yeah, they could always trade Jamal Adams. But I think at this point you would have gotten your most return ahead of the draft. You trade him now, yes. You're not getting nearly what you could have to begin with.
No, would have been this would be absolute sunk cost. It would be bad. I mean, it would be worse than trading Jamal Adams before. I mean, you talk about the capital that you gave up and then trading him before the draft this past offseason. It would have been bad, but at least you would have gotten something. At this point, after you trade, after you pay him, no, it would not be good. So I don't think that they're going to do that. Jamal Adams is going to be someone that they build around moving forward over the next 4 years rather than, you know, trying to move on from him at this point. But, you know, you look at everything else, I think everything's on the table for this team, barring how the rest of the season goes. If they can find a way to get in the playoffs, maybe the conversation gets put to a stop. But if they don't make the playoffs, I mean, everything is on the table, in my opinion.
What I need to know, do you guys think we'll be active at the trade deadline if we win these next 2 games?
Yes. Yes, I really, truly believe that. If they go 2-1 during this 3-game stretch, as I said before, they absolutely will be in it. Because this is something that they will be still in playoff contention. They still will have, you know, their hopes in front of them, knowing that Russell Wilson will get back. That's ultimately the goal. I mean, obviously going 3-0 would be great, but 2-1 was the realistic expectation here in this stretch. And so if they can make that happen, expect the Seahawks to be buyers at the trade deadline. If not, if they go 1-2, then I don't believe that you're going to see a move from them, because at some point they've got to stop, you know, trading away capital for veteran players that are going to have or carry larger contracts for them. They're in a situation where they're trying to get, eventually they got to get younger. They've got to get more talented. They've got to get younger and balance out, you know, their roster and, you know, for the future. And that's ultimately what I think the approach is, unless they truly feel like they're still a playoff, their playoff hopes are there.
What I need to know, remember when Jake had that horrible take when he said Christmas Chronicles 2 was better than 1? I like that it's not really a question. It's just like, you remember that time?
One, I don't remember saying that. And if I did, I won't back down from it. I stand by it. I think both of them are fantastic. And two, it's too early to be talking about Christmas movies. I mean, we're still in Halloween. We haven't even gotten to October 31st yet. Let's not pass over Halloween. I love Halloween.
What do you guys think about Ed Orgeron to Wazoo? I have two thoughts on this. One, is he vaccinated?
Jeez.
And two, LSU is paying a $17 million buyout to cut ties with him.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is more than just he's on the hot seat because the program isn't living up to expectations. That, to me, is approach with caution.
I wonder if he has to forfeit any of that buyout if he does take another job.
Mm. I don't know. It'd be a good question because it is a very favorable buyout.
Yeah, imagine paying someone when he's coaching.
Yeah, but it does happen. I mean, Charlie Weiss, when he was at Kansas, he was getting paid by like three other teams. He was getting paid by Notre Dame still. He was getting paid by Kansas City.
What if
he was getting paid by Florida
become
and
a
then
head coach,
Kansas.
Become a head coach, fail miserably, get the buyout.
Well, I mean, Nick Rolovich is still going to, whether he gets fired or not, he's still going to be getting paid from Washington State after this. So, I mean, it is pretty crazy, but Ed Orgeron to Washington State, I don't know if that would be a good thing because, Stacey, as you mentioned, I think there's a whole lot more to the story with Ed Orgeron's departure than just winning or losing on the field. And I don't know if the Cougs can afford to take on another off-the-field potential scandal here.
What I need to know, what's the longest losing streak you've ever been part of in any sport that you've played? I won't say how long my current losing streak is. Just know it's reached doubled figures. Chris and Enumclaw.
Double figures.
Chris, Jake, what's the longest losing streak you were ever... Did you ever have more than one loss at a time?
Yes. It was during my time with the Kansas Jayhawks. I am trying to look this up as we're talking through this here. Would have been there when I was playing. 13. Okay.
Exciting
radio.
It?
Yeah, I did have to filter through it. Man, it's so far back they won't even go to the schedule. Oh,
wow,
here we
you're
go.
Old.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 losses
ever,
in a row.
Ever in your life?
Ever in my life. That's the longest losing streak I've ever been a part of. And honestly, it was the hardest stretch that I've ever been a part of, too. Never experienced losing like that. That was not fun.
In 4 years, the swim team I was on, I think won 2 times.
I mean, but you gave it your best effort.
We have very
You finished in 10th.
We have
you
very,
did your job.
Very yeah. different life
It's a very individual sport, is it not?
I did finish 10th. You're
I know,
right.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you literally get more points for the more people you have.
Everybody
and then you're
else,
capped at the number of
Everybody else
you can
was
do.
Holding you back.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. I'm going to go out and throw the rest of my fellow swimmers under the bus.
We're going to get a bunch of messages from them being like, oh, really? Oh, really? This
All
is
right.
the real story about Stacey.
That'll do it for us today. For Curtis Rogers, for Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Rost. We will obviously be back with you guys tomorrow. And Wyman and Bob coming up next. They are keeping an eye on the latest from Wazoo and Rolovich. So stay tuned for any updates as they come in there. Don't go anywhere. This is 710 ESPN Seattle.